Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Tim Ferriss. He's an entrepreneur, angel investor, and public speaker, and the author of several best-selling books, including The 4-Hour Workweek, The 4-Hour Body, and The 4-Hour Chef. In this interview, Kevin went to Tim's house in San Francisco, and I live in Los Angeles, so I'm not on the episode. And just to let you know, Kevin's audio is a bit rough at the very beginning, but it quickly improves, so please stick with it because I know you're going to enjoy the eclectic list of tools Tim's chosen to share with us. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode at cool-tools.org, where you'll find links to all the tools Tim recommended. Now, sit back and enjoy Kevin's interview with Tim Ferriss.
I'm sitting with Tim Ferriss in his San Francisco home, surrounded by books and some really nifty instruments and some cool tools. And he's going to tell us about four of his favorite tools. And then we'll chat a little bit at the end about what he's up to. So, Tim, what do you have for us?
Well, I have a lot of different tools here, but there are a few that come to mind that I am using a lot in recent weeks and months. So the first is a mic, actually, that I use for a lot of podcasting on the go, recording intros. I've used it in airplane bathrooms, in parks. I've used it while walking, and that, in a lot of respects, explains why it is so useful. It is the Yellowtech IXM mic, and it is, as it would appear, and I'm sure we'll get a visual that you guys can check out, but it is a completely self-contained mic and recording system. So in other words, you don't have all these separate components. It looks like a thick hand microphone. It's from Germany. They have multiple mic heads that you can put on and replace. So some of them are directional, some of them are cardioid, etc. And the hardware, the firmware, I suppose it would be, inside automatically levels if you're dealing with multiple people, and it's just incredibly pristine audio that I use for just about everything. So I've been using this mic quite a lot. It does playback. It has a headphone jack. You can check everything out. And it's, if I had to choose one mic for everything, if I had to only travel with one, I would probably take this.
So you say it's self-record. So this is kind of, it looks like a little, it's just like a handle or the size of a flare or something. Mm-hmm. Does it take an SD card?
It takes an SD card. So you have an SD card at the bottom here, which you just take out and pop into your computer.
Right.
And then you can either charge it, or what I do is I just drop in a couple of AA batteries.
Okay.
And it keeps it fueled.
And like you can do a couple hours of recording?
Oh, yeah. Assuming you have a big enough SD card.
You could
do tons and tons of hours, yeah.
Okay. And is a microphone different in some way? Why is it particularly good as a microphone? There's generally two kinds, right? There's the condenser and then there's the dynamic. Does that make much difference here?
So I am going to get into the deep end of my ignorance pool real quick with audio, but what I can say is that part of what makes it nice, much like we were just discussing some software,
yeah,
right, like Zencaster, is that it is very simple and there are few variables,
okay,
to play with, meaning if I have right next to me, like we also have an H6 recorder with XLR cables and then the SM58 mics, etc. This does not require any external sort of componentry. And I don't know technically why it produces such good audio.
Okay.
And in fact, I've had audio engineers look at the specs and they will also ask me in some cases if they're editing my stuff, which studio did you record this in? And I'll say, I was actually walking down the sidewalk with like a sandwich in one hand, recording this on the way to the park. And it just blows their mind. So I don't know the sort of technical underpinnings that produce such good audio.
So the Yellowtech TEC, mm-hmm, is that the model or is that the brand?
I believe that is the company name and that the IXM is the model name.
Okay, IXM is what you suggest here.
Yeah.
And what does that cost?
This one's that's the only downside. And okay. This is not an inexpensive piece of gear. It's probably, I want to say, in the $500 to $700 okay. range.
All right.
So it's not completely out of whack when looking at other high-end right. audio recording gear. But if you are recording, say, Man on the Street, you'd have to do the old television reporter back and forth with the mic, right. of course. I don't mind doing that. But it's in my case, typically used as kind of a solo act.
Okay, great.
But it's a fantastic piece of hardware, and I use this almost every day every other day.
Right, so you'll do this if you're on a road and you have to do a podcast with somebody or you're at a conference or a meeting.
I'll just stick it in my backpack.
In your backpack, and you pull it out and say, we can do the podcast right now.
Yeah, exactly. So it has this nifty carrying case, and it's protected enough that I can just jam it in my backpack.
Uh-huh.
And on the flip side, what I've experienced when I have multiple cables and whatnot is you get one pin bent, yeah. and you're done. Right. Yeah, you're out of commission. You have no real backup plan. So there are many different mics. Being the creature that I am, I compulsively test just, you do the same thing, but just obscene amounts of gear.
Right.
And so I've tested many, many different types of mics, and there's a lot of good audio gear out there, but right. This has become my go-to.
Okay, cool. Yellowtech XIM. Yeah. Or IXM.
IXM,
okay, great.
So when in doubt.
Okay.
So the next one, I wanted to give tools that varied in price, right? So that one is the most expensive. There's a website that I go to on the regular, which is stilltasty.com, and that will tell you the good to eat. It will help you determine if something is still safe to eat or not. And
safe, you mean like expiration date?
That's right. So it's like, what type of chicken is it cooked? Is it in this type of package, that type of package? Here's how long it's good for in the fridge. Here's how long it's good for in the freezer, and so on and so forth. So if I'm sort of a perennial bachelor, looking through my refrigerator, I'm like, okay, we have like, yeah, you're right, mustard, vodka. All right, what do we have here? Oh my God, I'm starving. Like a can of lentils, and you know, fill in the blank, this, that, and the other thing. Then, I can figure out if it's safe to eat or if I'm going to potentially poison myself.
So it's called Still Tasty?
Stilltasty.com.
And you just, what do you put in?
You type in, there's
everything you know, you can tell?
Yeah, there's a search box and you would just type in whatever comes to mind. So you would have, let's say, grilled chicken, and then it would have...
ask you for the date? Does it ask you for the...
It doesn't ask you for the date. It will give you... You'll have to sort of determine you'll have to do the arithmetic yourself, but...
Okay.
And then it will give you a few different choices. So I'll have, you know, grilled chicken sealed in blah, blah, blah. Grilled chicken unsealed in restaurant carton.
Okay.
And it will give you the number of days and so on that...
Do you think that they actually did some research? Or is this... What is the answers based on? Is it... Because did you listen to the 99% Invisible podcast about expiration dates?
No, I didn't. I was just hanging out with Roman, so I should listen to it.
You should listen to it because they are so absurdly arbitrary that they're not even based on – they're basically based on no evidence whatsoever. They're kind of just basically like what could we guarantee and feel good about it? But it's not even that. It's even worse than that. It's more of like – anyway, you listen to it. So I'm just wondering if the information that they're giving is coming from expiration date data or something else.
It's a great question. I do not have a great answer to.
Okay.
I don't know. It was recommended to me by a number of food scientists and chefs. Okay. Doesn't mean that it's based on good data. But I'll put it this way. Since I've relied on that, I've given myself food poisoning more than a few times. I have not suffered a bout of food poisoning. Okay. Since using this website, but perhaps it's just a level of artificial comfort that I seek that I now have.
Well, do listen to the podcast because you know, and then it may or may not change your mind about that.
So the next is an unusual. I wouldn't call it a gadget. It's almost a rubber strap of sorts. This is called Voodoo Floss.
Voodoo Floss.
Voodoo Floss. And it's called Voodoo Floss because it is used to help fix or minimize pain symptoms related to soft tissue and soft tissue injuries. So if you have carpal tunnel syndrome, in my case, I have tendonitis in both elbows because I'm trying to learn gymnastics stage 38 with a very intense coach. And you wrap, for instance, in the case of the elbow, I would wrap my own arm with this strap of rubber. And
before you do the workout?
No, I would do it potentially. Generally, I would say afterwards.
Okay.
But typically 2 or 3 times per day, I'll wrap my elbows. And it is just astonishing how much you can improve range of movement and decrease pain.
Is this from the compression of it?
So, all right, this is where we get to the name. So there's compression. There's an aspect of potentially myofascial release, which is something we can get into if you'd like. There are so many factors at play that they just say it's voodoo because people ask how does it work and they'll give them a list of 20 things, but it takes a half hour to explain. So Kelly Starrett, who's the PT behind this, just got tired of explaining for an hour why it worked the way it did, and he said it's voodoo, it's magic voodoo.
What about the floss?
So the flossing part refers to, for instance, if I have pain at my medial epicondyle, which is this little bony protuberance on the inside of the elbow, then if I have golfer's elbow, it's going to be the flexor muscles attaching at that medial epicondyle, which is why it's called medial epicondylitis. So I will wrap this voodoo floss around my arm in such a way that it particularly, like piano wire, goes across that particular junction. And then as I go through movements, because I will do, say, bicep curls and go through different types of wrist exercises, it effectively acts as a floss on that tissue. And so it helps to decrease inflammation, remove or decrease scar adhesions and things of that type.
So the way you were describing this example made me wonder if you need a kind of a certain level of expertise or anatomy knowledge to actually even apply it.
You don't need a lot. And there are a lot of videos on YouTube that are very helpful. But, I mean, I could show you how this works. But it's in effect. And what I'm doing, I'll just provide the visual. So I'm laying this strap sort of across my forearm. Then I'm wrapping it and pinning it down on my leg and just getting it going. And then it's just, I'm sort of wrapping it almost like saran wrap around like a leg of ham or something. And I'm just making sure it is plenty tight. And there are guidelines. So I would do this, as I'm showing, with about 50% overlap all the way up my arm to mid-upper arm. And then I would do these types of movements.
I see.
And it's...
It doesn't cut the circulation?
It totally cuts the circulation off. So that's another part of the voodoo, is that you have this blood-restricted exercise and then hyperdilation of the blood vessels, which they're actually, for people who are really nerdy about this stuff, if you go... They're probably on PubMed, but there are studies looking at weight training combined with blood restriction. That's not a DIY thing. You should not necessarily do that.
And choking.
But not like David Carradine style, folks. This is more looking at, say, putting what appears to, it's almost like a cuff at the upper arm, like a heroin tie, basically, and doing weight training and seeing how that affects anabolic response and growth hormone and whatnot. The voodoo floss, what I like about it is that it literally fits in the palm of my hand when it's rolled up. So this, along with the mic, I can throw into a backpack. If I'm going on a day trip or a week trip, I don't have to bring a huge foam roller and this, that, and the other thing. I can just take this thing, stick it in a jacket pocket, and walk off to the airport, which I love, and I know you're a big fan of minimalist packing. So these things go really well together.
Okay, great.
And the last one is and we can certainly talk about more. My house is full of them. But this is one that in the last 2 weeks I've become very fascinated by, which is mushroom coffee.
Mushroom coffee.
Yeah. So the company is Four Sigmatic, and mushroom coffee is effectively exactly what it sounds like. It is coffee with mushrooms in it. And in this case, it has coffee, so instant coffee, about 40 milligrams of caffeine in a full packet, which is very low. So generally speaking, a cup of espresso might have 80 milligrams. A really strong cup of coffee might have 150 milligrams. This is 40. but it's combined with different types of mushrooms and substances. So you have chaga, which I was introduced to by Laird Hamilton, so the undisputed king of big wave surfing, after he put me through a pool workout with weights underwater. It's a long story and really scary. We had this chaga turmeric honey drink as a post-workout drink. And I felt like I had just, not that I would ever do such a thing, but like I don't do meth, but I can only imagine like if you do an incredible amount of stimulants that it felt a lot like I felt at the time. Yeah. And I was so lit up, even though it had no caffeine, that I became fascinated by this chaga, which is a huge mushroom. I mean, he had this gigantic chaga specimen in his closet.
Is this a wild mushroom?
Yeah, it's a wild mushroom. I think he had it imported, but it was the size of, basically the size of like three of the silver cord, which I have right here in front of me. Yeah. These gigantic hardcovers, like three of those stacked together. And this mushroom coffee has the instant coffee, chaga, and then there are two variations that I have. One with cordyceps, which has been used by endurance athletes for a long time, can make you very hot. And then there's one with something called lion's mane, which has a particular
kind of a mushroom.
And it has a particular, I don't know if lion's mane is an herb or a mushroom. The chaga definitely is. It is.
Lion's mane, there is a mushroom called lion's mane.
Then it might very well be that.
And
it, and it has a, in my case, a very profound cognitive effect. So that, this has been something that I am using as a cognitive tool and just experimental food right now, which I'm fond of. I mean, I consume, you know, ketone esters and all sorts of other disgusting things that this is not disgusting. This tastes just like coffee. It's quite good.
That's just online somewhere?
Yeah, if you go to 4sigmafoods.co or on Amazon. I got this through Amazon Prime because that's how I operate.
So when you're doing these kinds of trying out new foods, new supplements, new coffees, do you have any tools that you use for your quantified selfing? Do you use an app on your phone? Do you have a spreadsheet somewhere? Do you use little notebooks?
I use notebooks. I'm really old school. I use notebooks. They're very analog. I use notebooks and I use Evernote. So
do you scan the page and put it into?
I will do both. So I will either take photographs of my notebook because at some point I'll get this extreme separation anxiety.
Right, exactly, as you should.
As I should, and I'll put it into Evernote. Or, for instance, if I am, this is giving me flashbacks to our first quantified self meetup because I was the weirdo who got up and talked about ketosis and performance enhancing drugs. So right now I'm doing a somewhat unusual off label. Drug experiment with my elbow involving injections and so on. So, which, you know, I don't recommend necessarily. I have a lot of doctors and people who supervise me keep me from killing myself. But the point being, because I want to track what's working or not working, but at least have the variables pinned down, I will track my dosing in an Evernote doc that I type directly into. Dosing, frequency, etc. Side effects, lack of side effects. And in the case of the voodoo flossing, this is maybe we're getting off topic, but there are different breeds of quantified selfers. Mm-hmm. There are the, I happen to be, I think, in the category of sort of extreme goal focused quantified selfers, or I should say outcome focused.
Right.
And what that means is that there are cases when you want clean data and there are cases when you want results.
They're
sometimes mutually exclusive. In the sense that right now I'm in intense training for gymnastics, and I care more about being able to do my workouts and decreasing pain than I care about isolating variables. I'm throwing a handful of different modalities and treatments at my elbows at the same time. As long as I'm trending upward with the metrics that matter, in my case, pain perception, range of motion, mobility, and strength in particular movements, then I'll keep using that combination. And then after the fact, I can say potentially remove them or reintroduce them and determine what actually worked. But first and foremost, I'm going after some kind of outcome.
Right. Yeah, that's the difference where you're not really doing science, you're doing kind of performance enhancement. So.
I'm doing both. So science is in the field oftentimes really messy.
Right.
And a lot of the breakthroughs that end up being in the journals for, say, exercise science, uh-huh. are practiced by Olympic coaches or professional coaches or trainers years or even decades before. But it's typically in the context of preparing for a national championship right. or major league season or right. something like right. that, where they don't have the luxury of
right.
doing 4 weeks with each variable. So there's still a scientific aspect to it, meaning I could go very deep into this, but it's not complete chaos.
Right.
The recording allows me to, for instance, of all of the treatments that I've tried for my elbow, I've been able to discern through, I think, practice of the scientific yeah. method, but sort of the frontier medicine version, that the voodoo floss is by far, along with something else called this arm aid, in terms of manual manipulation,
right.
One of the best tools out there.
Right, right.
And in part because the good method that you will use is better than the perfect method you will abandon. And when you have something that can fit in your pocket and travel right, right. with you, you're more likely to use it.
Exactly. So are there any other kind of quantified self-ish tools? You mentioned Evernote. You're a big fan of Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other apps that you ever use on your phone? Talking about having something that's always with you.
Yeah. Let me take a look at my phone.
Because that's where a lot of these kind of quantified self tools have ended up.
Definitely.
On people's phones.
I have Coach.me, which is it used to be Lyft. It's a startup that I'm involved uh-huh. with, and it provides accountability and also community okay. interaction for specific types of goals.
Okay.
And I think the social pressure, the accountability piece mm-hmm. of goal setting or behavioral change is very understudied and underappreciated.
Yeah.
You can people will figure out the how very easily. Most failures in behavioral modification do not come from a lack of data. They come from a lack of incentive. Although, I mean, there's obviously power in smart data. I'm looking here at other apps that I might use. Evernote, of course, we already mentioned. I am an app light guy, but there are tools, for instance.
But you've just gone through three screens of apps.
I have. These are just don't happen to be quantified
okay.
Self apps. But there is one that a device called the Precision Extra, XTRA, which I've really been enjoying uh-huh. using for the last few months, which is a glucometer. So it requires a finger prick.
Right.
That also doubles as a ketone meter.
Okay.
And this is very hard to find. There aren't many devices like this. So you get two different strips, one for glucose, one for ketones, and it's measuring something called beta-hydroxybutyrate, specifically in the blood, which is much more reliable than the keto sticks that you would pee on, for reasons I could bore everyone with. And what that allows me to do is when I'm experimenting with ketosis, so going from using glucose as a primary mm-hmm. fuel to using body fat, I can, instead of having a binary question of am I in ketosis mm-hmm. or not, which has always been very sloppy, I can look at my millimolar concentration of ketones in my blood. And so now I physiologically know what feeling symptoms, performance outputs correspond to, say, 0.5 millimolars, mm-hmm. 1.2 millimolars, deep ketosis, like 6 millimolars, which I can get into. And I can determine my sweet spot for cognitive function and then tweak my diet to achieve that. So the Precision Extra has been really fun for me. And that's another example of using manual recording. I have a tiny little journal that mm-hmm. fits inside the sort of device mm-hmm. satchel. And that's where I record my metrics. And then I'll take photos and put them into Evernote.
That's cool. Yeah. So we're just about out of time, but I wanted to just ask about one more question on your tools. So you travel a lot. You seem to be a nomad in many ways, always on the go. Is there a particular thing that you pack all the time, or a piece of luggage that you're using that you really love, or something else that you are using for on your go style?
Yeah.
I remember you used to travel with a shower head.
Yeah, those are great. Those tiny little shower heads. I don't travel with it anymore. I used to have this, this fantastic, if you just search shower head in my name, it should pop up online somewhere on my blog. But yeah, this fantastic shower head is like a $3 or $4 shower head.
I was always kind of a little bit reluctant to like start switching.
Yeah, it was so great though. It would basically quintuple the water pressure because you always get these these showers when wherever you might be, and it's just like some feeble old
drip.
Drip. It's terrible. So that was a really easy one to travel with. I haven't been traveling with that. I probably should, but these days I've been so focused on training. I have a pair of travel parallettes. So if you think of parallel bars, parallettes, like miniature parallel bars.
Are you training for something in particular, by the way?
I'm training to, I've always wanted to train in gymnastics, never had access to a coach. And I gave up many, many, many years ago because I was too old, too this, too that. And then I was inspired by this coach who has turned even like 40, 45, 50 year olds into real athletes in gymnastics to pick it up and, put my ego in check and actually try it. So there, I'm training for specifically something called a press handstand from pike position, a front lever and a planche right now, which are all very, very joint intensive. But the travel parallettes basically look like let's just call it 1¼-inch PVC pipe. Each one is about, let's call it 12 inches long, and then they have little squared ends so that you can put them on the ground. And you get just enough clearance for your knuckles. And you can do all sorts of fantastic exercises. The Voodoo Floss, definitely. I'm also traveling with this. I have never gotten anything out of foam rolling, really, even though I religiously did it for a very long time, until I got this device called the Rumble Roller, which is a small knobby foam roller that is really aggressive that I like quite a lot. And then there's this thing I have. This is a real pain in the ass to travel with, but it's over there on the floor. It's basically a needle bed.
It's like the bed of nails.
It's a bed of nails.
In Faker.
Yeah, it's a bed of nails that rolls up. And I will literally check another piece of luggage if I have to bring this with me. Now I have.
And what do you do with it?
So it's fantastic for, I think, just meditation and toughness training. But also, the reason I bought it is that a Cirque du Soleil performer who was helping me with some handstand stuff said he used to use it every day for back pain because his coach insisted on it. And I had torn my lat, the gigantic muscle in the back at one point, horribly painful. Nothing would fix it. And I used one of these for 3 days, just doing like 5 to 10 minute sessions twice a day. Symptoms gone. It was unbelievable. So I've turned people onto this. And so many of my friends have bought this. I have one here.
And what's it called?
This is the Nyoya. Like if you just search up bed of nails, it'll pop up spike mat, or I think they call it the acupressure mat, which is a lot gentler than it actually is. But the Nyoya makes one. And if you search bed of nails, there's another brand that's actually called bed of nails. It's the same thing. I'm sure it's made in the same factory.
It looks like a beach inflatable mat. That's what it looks like. Yeah. And there's these little white discs.
Little white discs. It's basically if you looked at, say, golf cleats, and you have you took like an inch diameter circle of that golf cleat
and turned
it into a disc, and then took like 100 of those discs and put them on a little piece of fabric that you lay down on. That's what it is. And so I have one here. I have one on the East Coast where I spend time. I just have one waiting there for me. In LA, I have another one waiting there for me. And they're cheap. They're like $50.
But you lay down and it's extremely painful, and then you forget about your back pain. Is that how it works?
Why it works is a whole separate conversation, but it's depends on the day. If you have retained a lot of water and you lay on it, you will feel it. You won't think that you're laying on wood. That's for sure. So I recommend people start off slow. I do it without a shirt. That's when I feel like you get the best benefit out of it. But even just for relaxing the occipitals, like the attachment of these muscles at the back of the neck, for people who have chronic, say, like jaw tightness and neck tightness, it's great. And I've had a lot of friends who'd made fun of me for these who now use them every day.
Okay.
So those are a few things that I've been traveling with.
The bed of nails is really the highlight of my trip here. Where can people find you if they don't know already?
People can find me at 4hourworkweek.com. I am doing a lot of my talking about tools and tactics and weird experiments that I'm doing, and also interviewing people like you and all sorts of world-class experts around the world.
You have a podcast.
Yeah, whether it's like Jamie Foxx or Arnold Schwarzenegger or generals or chess prodigies or computer hackers. The Tim Ferriss Show is the podcast, which is, I think it's the number one business podcast on iTunes right now. So it's pretty easy to find. Tim Ferriss with two R's and two S's.
And it's about more than just business.
Totally. I had to choose a category. I'm never very good at that.
Yeah.
And it's about deconstructing world-class performers. What are their routines? What are their rituals? What internal dialogues do they use when they're going through setbacks? What are their favorite books, morning routines, default breakfasts? Do they fast, workouts, all of that stuff? Like, the real kind of news you can use is what I focus on.
And it's a really great one. Thanks, Tim, for being on our podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.